Are you a twin? The odds are against it, really, since only 3% of births in the United States are of twins. But while the experience of being a twin may be rare, it's long fascinated people around the world. Philosopher Helena de Bresse, who is a twin herself, explores the long tradition of twin representations in art, myth, and popular culture, twins' peculiar social standing, and what it's really like to be one of two, in her new book, How to Be Multiple, The Philosophy of Twins. Helena is a professor of philosophy at Wellesley College, Massachusetts. Her essays and humor writing have appeared in The Point, The New York Times, The Los Angeles Review of Books, McSweeney's Internet Tendency, and elsewhere. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Hi, I'm Helena de Bresse, a professor of philosophy at Wellesley College, a writer of memoir and creative nonfiction, and the author of How to Be Multiple, The Philosophy of Twins. The philosophy of twins, you might be thinking, what's that? Well, as I'll explain in a moment, I believe the experience of twins can shed light on a variety of deep and fascinating existential questions. Questions about the nature of personal identity, love, freedom, and justice that go to the heart of what it means to be human. I'm interested in twins intellectually. I mean, who isn't? Twins are wild. But I also have a personal investment in the subject because I am an identical twin. And my own experience of twinhood is woven right throughout my book. I also draw on many examples of twins from myth, literature, film, and popular culture, and jokes. There are many twin jokes in this book. To give you a sense of what's in How to Be Multiple, I'm going to take you on a brief tour now of five key insights from the book. Insight number one, twins are freaks. Now, whoa there, you might say. That's not very nice, Helena. But don't worry, I'm not using the term freak pejoratively here. I'm using it in the neutral dictionary sense of odd, unusual, anomalous. Identical twins in particular are very rare. We're only 0.3% of the population. And in both the similarity of our appearances and the closeness of our connection, we're far outside the human norm. Throughout history, humans have used freaks as a teaching tool and as a source of validation for the allegedly normal among us. People used to go to 19th century freak shows, not only for the sheer spectacle, but also to reassure themselves and their children that, unlike, say, the bearded lady or the fat man or the savage, they had hair in the right places. A well-defined gender, an appropriate size, and a superior race. In this way, the freak show set up and supported a powerful image of the ideal human by opposition. Conjoined twins were a fixture on the freak show circuit. And although literal freak shows are now out of fashion, shall we say, we freakish twins, whether conjoined or unconjoined, continue to be used in a similar, more covert way by singletons. Singletons is what we in the trade call non-twins. So how do singletons use twins as modern-day freaks? Well, from the late Middle Ages on, the best human life has been portrayed in the West as one of self-governed individual action, free of the influence and demands of other people. Twins depart from that atomistic picture in multiple ways, physically, cognitively, emotionally, and agentially, in terms of agency. We twins tend to overlap and seep into each other. This interdependence is a deviant way of being in Western culture. So, in a variety of ways, singletons use twins as a kind of cautionary tale, an image of what to avoid. Let's get into this in a bit more detail with insight number two. Twins can share a self. People often imply that twins aren't fully distinct people, but rather a single person split or duplicated. Antonio asks of Sebastian and Viola in Twelfth Night, how have you made division of yourself? An apple cleft in two is not more twin than these two creatures. And any pair of twins you know will have tales of being given a single birthday present to share, being referred to as the twins instead of by their individual names, and being treated as essentially interchangeable by teachers, friends, or relations. For much of my life, I thought this idea that twins are a single person was obviously false. My twin Julia and I have distinct personalities. We live independent lives in different countries. I don't have access to her calendar, let alone her thoughts, And when someone steps on her foot, I don't feel it. Of course, we're not the same person, I used to think. Ugh, singletons are so annoying. But recently, I've been wondering if there is actually something to this idea. I argue in my book that twins actually can share personhood in three distinct ways. They can share a mind, they can share agency, and they can share an identity. What's cool about this is that once you recognize twins doing these things, there are many examples of this in my book, then you can see that non-twins do them too, albeit in a less obvious way. The metaphysical boundaries between parents and children, spouses, and close friends are a lot more porous than we like to think. So what makes you so sure that all of you is contained solo within that single envelope of skin? Insight number three, twins reveal the limits and the benefits of binary thinking. When twins aren't being treated as a single person, they're often treated as binary opposites. In my twinship, I've always been the introvert, for instance, and my sister has been the extrovert. In other cases, one twin's the evil twin, the other the good twin. One's the chaos muppet, the other the order muppet. Or one's the tomboy, the other the femme. Many stories about twins have this structure. A stark opposition in character, virtue, or preoccupation is set up, and one twin is positioned at each end of the spectrum. It's easy to criticize binary thinking for being cramping and reductive. But there are useful things about the binarizing habit too. We humans set up these kind of polarized contrasts to make the chaos we encounter every day easier to manage, to make our surroundings and our associates seem more orderly and predictable, and to create a stable sense of our own distinctive personality features and talents. Binary thinking has played a major role in my own life as a twin, as I explain in my book. It formed my early sense of who I was, the quiet one, and also fueled my plan to be a writer. Julia was the illustrator in our family. She's actually drawn pictures for this book. And that freed me up as a kid to feel writing was my true vocation, my special thing. You might recognize this polarization of identity in your life too, in relation to your siblings growing up, or your spouse now, or your best friend. Now, of course, no one can really be cleanly positioned at one end of a binary. We are all much more complicated than that. So if our sense of self bears the mark of binary thinking, should we be worried that our identity is somehow inauthentic? I argue in my book that while binary thinking can be taken too far, there's nothing inauthentic in principle about forming your sense of self in relation to another person. We humans are relational beings. Essentially, we co-create each other. And there's actually something beautiful about it. Once you conceive of this in the right way, and the especially vivid case of twins can help us see it. Twins are relationship outlaws. My twin sister and I are both queer, and I couldn't help noticing when researching my book an odd set of parallels between the way that twins and gay couples are portrayed in our culture. Twins are often presented as kind of gay. Think of the common sexual fantasy of female identical twins making out, for instance. And gay couples are often presented as kind of twinny. I recently came across the term dyke alike, which captures the idea that lesbians tend to date women who look like them. What's even more interesting is that both queer couples and twins are pathologized in art and popular culture in similar ways. They're presented as immature, selfish, immoral, mentally ill, violent, and sexually deviant. Twins are often assumed to be at risk of committing twincest, as it's cutesily called, and stories about them have tended to end with at least one party dying via murder, suicide, or both. What's going on here? I argue that both queer couples and twins are demonized because they're relationship outlaws. They both depart from the central expectation in a straight culture that super close adult couples will be romantic partners of different genders. In one particular way, very close twinship actually represents a more radical form of love than queerness does. Queer couples may share a gender, but they're still in a sexual romantic relationship. And close twins ditch that part. They put a platonic connection at the very heart of their life. They may live next door to each other or in the same house. They may co-raise each other's children. They may go on frequent joint vacations without their spouses. They may even wear matching outfits or go to a twin festival to try and marry a matching pair. Wrong, 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 we all scream. This is no way to protect marriage and the nuclear family. Twins have to die at the end of the movie to preserve the safety of the nation. My contention is that thinking about twinship in a more open-minded and subtle way than we standardly do can help each of us broaden our sense of what counts as a healthy and meaningful human relationship. And finally, insight number 5. Twins can help us chill about free will. Twins trigger many singletons into doubting the existence of human free agency, sometimes to the point of panic. The likeness of identical twins goes well beyond their looks to encompass their interests, values, talents, and personality traits. For an extreme case, think about those famous identical twins who were separated at birth and found on being reunited at 39 that they'd each been christened Jim, called their pet dog Toy, married a Linda and then a Betty, and named their son James Allen. They both worked security jobs, drove Chevys, spent their weekends doing woodwork in their garages, and vacationed at the same beach in Florida. The results of their personality, intelligence, and brainwave tests came out almost identical. They consumed large amounts of nicotine and beer. They weighed exactly 180 pounds, and they both bit their nails to the quick during the day. If we assume that their shared genes explain these similarities, it looks like much of who any of us is derives from biological forces beyond our control. And if who we are determines in turn how we behave, how can any of our actions be genuinely chosen? Identical twins whose lives take very different paths inspire a somewhat different anxiety. There was this rom-com in the 90s called Sliding Doors, which split into parallel storylines partway through, narrating the dramatic consequences of Gwyneth Paltrow either catching or not catching a single train. Like that movie, identical twins with strikingly diverse life experiences underscore for singletons the role that purely circumstantial factors play and how their own lives turn out. My anecdotal impression is that we identical twins are much less worked up about this than non-twins are, and I think that makes sense. For one thing, we identicals have got very used to the idea that our genes determine much of who we are. We've seen the obvious mark of our shared biological inheritance on our lives from day one. But also, I think we twins are less likely to yearn for a causal history that's somehow free from the external influences of nature and nurture. Twins who get on well are more inclined to value than fear the sort of intimate connections with another human that deeply influence who one is. All in all, I argue the case of twins is best seen not as undermining the possibility of free will, but as providing reassurance that the kind of everyday freedom we all have is more than enough. I hope this brief tour has persuaded you that just as researchers use twins scientifically to discover the roots of human behavior, each of us can use twins philosophically to reconsider what it means to be a person, what it is to love another human, how we can respect those who are different from us, and what kinds of freedom really matter. Twins may take doubling to pro level, but they aren't the only ones who contain multitudes. Reflecting on their experience can help all of us recognize our own capaciousness and approach life with greater curiosity, imagination, and courage. There's plenty more in the book. I hope you enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it, and my twin enjoyed illustrating it. And thanks for tuning in.
Thank you, Helena. That was Helena DeBress with 5 big ideas from How to Be Multiple, The Philosophy of Twins. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.